defects are being resolved. Then it went ahead this week with its rollout of the powerful new DeskPro 486-25 personal computer. It uses the Intel 486 chip, and that means up to 3 times the speed and power of its predecessors. Meanwhile, NCR is also joining the upgrade competition with a new machine based on the 486. IBM has released upgrade circuit boards for its PS2 line, although it has yet to roll out a new machine based on the chip. Some industry observers say this microprocessor will let PCs do jobs done by mini-computers or even small mainframes. It could let smaller businesses, or even individuals, compete more effectively with bigger firms in tasks ranging from engineering and design to graphics and publishing. We're just days away now from one of the biggest computer shows in the country, and our best window on what you'll be able to get in 1990. The Comdex Computer Show, getting underway this week in Las Vegas, will see the introduction of the first PC with a built-in laser disk drive. It will come from the Dutch Philips organization. CDs, like those you put in your stereo system, and computers will mix text, sound, and striking graphics with color and multi-channel stereo sound effects. Congress is holding hearings right now on legislation to punish the creators of computer viruses. But the industry's main lobby, the Computer and Business Equipment Manufacturers Association, says current proposals could also outlaw common programs, ranging from spell checks to some forms of communication software. The group's vice president, Ted Heininger, told Soundbites that he sees a better way to legislate against viruses.
We think that Congress should look at intent. It should look at criminal intent. Rather than trying to restrict the technology, it should look at the intent of the person who's there at the computer. Is that person trying to get into the machine? Is he trying to get into someone's database to cause harm or to cause delay? What is the intent of that person?
Heininger says existing computer laws may prove adequate against viruses and should be given a chance to work before new ones are enacted. Even as the New York Stock Exchange tries to limit or to halt computer program trading, investors big and small are starting to do it away from the exchange. Institutions and pension funds are already swapping 6 to 10 million shares a day on systems that bypass the exchange floor. 400 institutions are using 2 major off-exchange systems, one run by Jefferies & Company in Los Angeles, another by a subsidiary of the Reuters News Service. Is program trading something for the individual investor with a good PC? We put that question to Wayne Holly, a partner in the local investment firm of Sage Ruddy & Company, and he told us yes and no, saying a good program can respond quickly to market changes, but brokers and key accounts do tend to get major news first, and that can make all the difference.
So they're supposedly no one is supposed to be privileged to, insider information per se or what have you. I would say that they probably do get a preference phone call as they're releasing a news announcement. So it can, just that type of news alone and have it with an institution, all of a sudden, quickly buying. That probably would preclude the average guy on the street, even with a good computer and what have you, to have that kind of information to act on.
But Holly also predicts the growing number of online databases will soon make information available to small investors as quickly as it gets to the big boys, closing the information gap and allowing small investors to react more quickly to any market change. Competition is heating up on the low end of the laser printer market. Epson is introducing a new EPL 6000 model priced to compete with the latest Hewlett-Packard models at just under $1,500 list price. Epson says its machine is 50% faster at 6 pages output per minute and gets up and running after just 21 seconds warm-up, as opposed to 40 seconds for the Hewlett-Packard model. Epson claims its machine can also be networked to up to 4 computer users and that it's compatible with most PC software. It is expected to be in the stores before the end of the year. And that's this week's Computer News. You're listening to Soundbites on WXXI 1370.
Thank you.
This is Soundbites on WXXI 1370. I'm Bob Smith. Coming up in the program, just after 1:30, we'll be hearing from Joe Golden, who is the Director of Technical Support for Ashton Tate. One of the most popular database software packages is Ashton Tate's DBase. Joe is going to tell us what it can do for you. He'll be covering the entire subject of databases and take your questions on applications, and that's coming up right after the 1:30 break. Then, later on in the program as well, producer Adam Wilcox will be talking with InfoWorld contributing editor John Walkenback about Plan Perfect, the new release of WordPerfect Corporation's spreadsheet software. Walkenback says the folks at Lotus are not worried as of yet. Next week, Bob Lahn of PC World joins us with the latest news on the latest new introductions in hardware and software from Comdex 89, the big introduction for the industry's new goods for the 90s in Las Vegas. Our originally scheduled conversation during this segment with Ed Foster of InfoWorld has been postponed because of some technical problems in the link up out west. So we're replaying one of our most popular past segments with computing pioneer Adam Osborne. This portion of the program is pre-recorded, so if you hear the phone number, please wait to call until our live segment at 1:30. To tell you how to get the most out of your older machine, we have a man on the live line with us from California who has been a major player in the personal computing field ever since its infancy. He is Adam Osborne, who first burst on the scene as a major hardware manufacturer at the beginning of the decade. But although that adventure ended in the midst of the big industry shakeout a few years ago, his involvement in the personal computing field by no means has come to an end. He is today a major publisher of economically priced software, and he is on the live line with us right now. It is good to have you with us. Welcome to the program. Let me ask you, first of all, the bulk of today's machines, let's face it, are not these new sophisticated machines with the most advanced chips that we're hearing about today. Most people out there are using basically machines that are of previous generations, aren't they?
That is correct.
And, of course, that means that most people are not necessarily able to take advantage of all of the most sophisticated software that's out there today, are they?
Well, yes and no. They, in fact, the capabilities are there. It's just you have to look beyond the advertising, and it really is all there. You know, what's happening is that people are bamboozled into thinking that you have to have the highest speed machine and the best this and the best that. It's not really true.
Now, of course, the literature that's out there nowadays, even the reviews of equipment, talk a lot about, oh, gee, we can run with this brand new chip that's out. Of course, you've heard about this 486 chip that's out, this central processing integrated circuit that is going to be the heart of the next generation of computers. And they say, wow, this is going to run programs that are out there right now anywhere from 25% faster to 50% faster to almost double speed on this, and people obviously are going to be knocked out and say, wow, we ought to have that. But not necessarily so, you say.
That is correct.
Now, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, the disadvantages of the older machines vis-a-vis the new ones, if in fact there are any that can't be overcome. By staying with an older machine rather than going to the updated technology, if I can afford it, what am I losing?
The major thing that you're not going to get is speed. You know, people get seduced into having things happen instantly. We live in the instant gratification generation. And when you really think about it, what happens is a 15-second delay for something to happen becomes forever, and people are willing to pay a lot of money so that the 15-second goes down to 1.5 seconds. And if you're going to have that 15-second delay occurring 20 times, then after a while the 15 seconds becomes a real drag and you want it to be 1.5 seconds. But if you really look at it, 15 seconds 10 times a day is not that much time.
We're talking 2.5 minutes out of a workday.
Right.
And for saving 2.5 minutes a workday, we're actually being asked to scrap whole systems and whole machines and pay tens of thousands of dollars in some cases to set up networks of new machines then.
That is correct.
Economically then, at times it probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense for a lot of users, does it?
It really doesn't. Large corporations in particular get suckered into this thing. Before very long, the MIS department says you've got to have the latest, you've got to have the best, or else they start bringing in new machines, and once one guy has it becomes a status symbol. Now everybody needs to have this fastest machine. And then, of course, you've got the memory limitations. People right now, 640K, that's K is 1,048, so 640K is like 640,000 bytes of memory, is supposed to be a big barrier these days. It's not really. It's only a barrier because software companies are incompetent in the way they generate software.
So what you're saying is they're making the programs a lot more complex than they have to be.
It's not even complex. They're misdesigned, is really what they are. The major thing is the question of when do you keep your data in memory and when do you keep your data on disk. Now, let's take the spreadsheet example. Spreadsheets are today a programming environment or programming language. Now, we learned long ago, in the 40s, that when you have data in a programming language, you keep that on disk, you don't put that in memory. Okay? Well, this all suddenly ended with the start of spreadsheets. People have spreadsheets, they keep their data in the spreadsheet in memory. And now at the latest versions, Lotus 1.2.3 Revision 3.0 coming out, it is an abomination in terms of its design. It is suggesting that you keep all your data in memory. And, I mean, they're talking about huge amounts of data, all of which you're going to have to keep in memory if you want to use the program. This is such ridiculous nonsense, because data is supposed to be kept on disk. You're supposed to bring it in when you need it, use it, and then put out what you worked on back on disk. This is the right way to do it. You do it that way, and you don't need any more than 640K RAM. You don't need these megabyte machines that they're now trying to foist on us.
So what you're saying is there's a fundamental mistake in the way the whole thing has been set up.
Absolutely.
Now, of course, that we should mention, of course, that you are putting out a competing and less expensive version of software to do a lot of the same things that that particular program that you're talking about, the Lotus 1.2.3, is doing. And shall we assume for the moment that when you bring out an analogous program, or if you have one out already, you're not going to be making the same mistakes?
That is correct. We already have one that's pretty analogous, and it would be no secret to say any time we have a product, we're coming out with a new version of it, because if we're not, then we're killing the product. We are not going to make that mistake. You know, we know a little bit more about software than Lotus does. Lotus is run by a guy who's basically a marketing management type. He doesn't know anything about software. We do, you know. We've designed it properly so that the data exists on disk, not in memory. You can do all of the same kinds of things and a great deal more. If you wanted to do the same things with the Lotus product that you can do with our product, VP Planner, you would have to have in excess of 100 million bytes of memory.
And that's a pretty heavy-duty system.
That is correct.
Now, if you look at that, and of course we're talking about a major difference in cost too, aren't we?
Yes, we're roughly half that price.
Now, that brings me to a couple of things which I want to get to, but first of all, let's talk a little bit more, if we can, about the way systems are being set up these days. What I'm hearing from you is that a lot of people are basically creating programs to match up with and essentially to use up all of the new capability that's being put into the machines. In other words, what they will do is as soon as you've got a new machine, somebody's going to come up with a program with a few extra bells and whistles on it that'll use it all up.
Oh, always. Absolutely always.
And what are you getting from it?
Not very much. You know, you really aren't. You're getting it to be a little faster sometimes, a little prettier. For example, right now, the big argument is, do you OS2 or not OS2? We've all worked with an operating system called DOS. The new version of it is OS2. What does OS2 really give you that DOS doesn't? It gives you a prettier, graphically more pleasing interface. It doesn't give you anything that you can't do with DOS.
I have a feeling that we're stirring up a little controversy here even as we speak, and I'd be interested to hear what some of you think who are listening right now at 263-WXXI, 263-9994. A man who minces absolutely no words at all, Adam Osborne, is on the live line with us, and we'd like to hear from you as well. He seems to be suggesting that perhaps in a lot of ways we are making life a little bit more difficult for ourselves than it needs to be, and that we could get along just nicely with earlier, older, perhaps a little bit less technically sophisticated, but nevertheless workable machinery, software, and hardware than we're doing right now. And we'd like to hear from you and your thoughts and perhaps some guidance, seek some guidance as to how best to take advantage of what you have, whether it be old or new. And the number is 263-WXXI, 263-9994, here on the Soundbites program. We'll get to the phones in just a moment. But for the moment, if I may, let's dwell also on those people who do want to take advantage of whatever bells and whistles are out there. Is there a way to upgrade in terms of either software or in terms of hardware, some of those older PCs that are out there, and is there any reason to do so?
Well, the hardware, definitely. There is. People just come out with new versions of the CPU board. They come out with more memory boards. You can have an ancient machine, and you can bring it up to the most modern capabilities if you want to spend the money. Sure, you can do it. Absolutely. There is nothing you cannot upgrade. It's just going to cost.
Even one of those oldies but goodies like an original PC.
Oh, yes.
Well, that's reassuring to me because that's precisely what I have at home. And 263-WXXI for your questions at home or office or whatever. Let's go to them right now. Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say. You're on the air.
Good morning. Afternoon. I have a question. I have a Macintosh 128K, and I'm heading towards desktop publishing needs with it. And can't find any software that 128K, which is not a particularly small computer, will run. My option, since Apple offers no buyback program, is to sell the computer through the paper and upgrade, I guess, to a 1 megabyte machine or put in a new board. Any advice?
I'd go ahead and upgrade. The 128K Macintosh was the Steve Jobs disaster. He had a thing about not having fans in computers, and if you were going to put everything in the Macintosh that they should have had in the first place, a fan would have gone along with it to dissipate the heat.
Mm-hmm.
That early 128K Macintosh is essentially worthless. You've got to have that 1 megabyte of RAM. The machine is actually very powerful, very useful once you get that amount of memory in it. And those larger Macintoshes are now beginning to make major, major inroads into the corporate marketplace.
Mm. So should I replace the boards in this machine, or for approximately $1,300, should I buy a 1 megabyte Macintosh?
I'd buy the 1 megabyte and just move on up.
Mm.
The machine you have is totally obsolete.
Okay, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for calling. Let's take another call right now at 263-WXX. I do have a couple of lines open, and we invite you to join in the conversation. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Oh.
Don't be bashful. Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Sorry, I'm hearing the delay here.
Oh, that's another thing we want to remind you. Yeah. Please turn down your radio. We are on 10-second delay. Make sure that won't confuse you.
Okay, my question is, I have a 1 megabyte Atari, and they just moved up with the 2 megabyte and the 4 megabyte. And the benefit there is you can run more than one program at a time. And if I were to put in another board, would I be able to run the two programs, or if I used a hard drive, would I be able to do that? Do you know anything about that?
Well, first of all, the Atari is a kind of a world of its own, and I frankly know very, very little about the Atari ST. The idea of running two programs at a time, let's just stop on that one a minute. If you are going to do that, it means that you have one program, say, executing in the background and the other one going in the foreground that you're actually, what's the keyboard connected to? What's the screen connected to? Do you want to go back to that one and come forward to this one, etc.?
Right. Well, what I'm doing is, I'm recording music, so I have one program that does all the music, the sequencing, and the composing. And if I want to edit a voice or a horn or whatever, I'd like to be able to do that without having
that's
to load.
That's one of the most... That's an area where Atari dominates completely. That's one of the few areas. Atari really is ahead there in
right.
that music.
That's why I bought that one.
And that's a heck of a good market for it. And there, what you want to do is probably very valuable, yes. You are going to effectively have one program in the background, one in the foreground. and it's worth doing. Now, I know so little about the Atari product line that I would hesitate to give you specific advice, other than to say if you get whatever Atari tells you you need in order to have the two programs running simultaneously, by all means do it, but take their advice. Don't take mine, because I know so little about the Atari ST.
Okay, and the general question is, would adding a hard drive, would that add to my speed, or would that just add to my memory?
Normally it would add to your off-RAM memory. In other words, the bulk storage. It's not going to help you a great deal for your speed.
Okay.
Unless you get a faster disk or something like that.
Okay. All right, well, thank you.
Okay, and good luck with your composition efforts. Thanks for calling. 263-WXXI, our number, and good afternoon. You're on the air.
Yes, I have a question. I know you guys are talking about the Atari line, but the question is, I have a 130XC Atari computer. It's an 8-bit, and I was wondering, they had these memory upgrades and other bags and whistles, et cetera, whatever, and I was wondering, is it worth the effort to, you know, expand the 130XC, the 8-bit, the last bit of the last one of their 8-bit computers, or would you recommend possibly upgrading to a better computer?
You know, the Atari line is one I know just about nothing about. I don't have one. I've never used one. I'm limited to general knowledge about computers in general, and I'd hesitate really to start making any specific recommendations, for fear that I'll be talking about out of my head, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm just kind of wondering there, because I've had this for a couple of years here now, and it's getting to the point where, like, you know, you see all these new computers around and everything that, you know, could do almost anything that possibly is available there.
Well, you know, go look at what they have, mm-hmm. and don't think that you bought too early. I mean, look at, have you gotten 2 years of value for the money you paid?
I would say yes.
In that case, you know, move on. Go and get the next thing up that does what you want to do, providing you look at these capabilities and say, heck yes, I can use that, rather than, well, this is out, it's better. Since it's better, I'm not sure how I'm going to use this better feature, but I'll go ahead and get it because it's there. That's stupid. If, on the other hand, you can see the real advantages that come from buying this new capability, then that's the basis for going ahead and getting it.
Because like my son, he's you know, we started school pretty soon, and I know kids and computers and stuff. And I want to get something that possibly when he gets into school, that, you know, they can use, and you know, I'll be able to use also, and be around for a little while.
Well, you know, if you're going to get something for a kid at school, I would not get an Atari.
Okay.
And the reason is because you want the kid to learn something that the kid can use later on.
Right.
And the industry is entirely IBM PC and now Macintosh.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to get one or the other of those so that the kid learns things that will subsequently be valuable at school.
Right. Okay. He's just studying elementary school, but I know they got computers in schools now and stuff. And I just want to get something that he could use.
Right. Well, even at elementary schools now, they're getting Macintoshes and IBM PCs.
Okay. Well, I'll look at those lines then.
Okay. Best of luck to you, and thank you very much for calling.
Goodbye.
263-WXXI, and good afternoon. You're on the air with us.
Hi. Yes. Mr. Osborne, I just want to tell you that a number of years ago, I owned and sold Osborne 1s. I thought they were wonderful. And I wanted to thank you not only for a great machine, but for the down payment on my house.
Good. Good.
For those of you out in the audience who don't know, Mr. Osborne used to sell a computer called the Osborne 1, which in its day was the hottest product out.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, not only the hardware, but the bundle of the software made it an awfully easy machine to sell and an awfully nice machine to use. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling. That raises another question which I'd like to ask. I remember portable machines were part of your major stock and trade early on. And I'm wondering what you think of the laptops and the portables that are out there right now, because IBM's making a big promotional splash, getting a lot of ink about this 21-pound new PS2 the machine that they're selling right now, 386 base. They're selling it for about $7,000 or $8,000, about the price of a halfway decent new car. What do you think of it?
Well, IBM have never done very well in that laptop market, and I wouldn't touch it. Why? It's, first of all, 21 pounds today is way too heavy. The way to go is with the what we call the flat screen display units. They're much cheaper, much easier to carry around. You try and open up one of those laptops in an airplane and use it, and you won't get very far because you don't have enough battery to use it without having a power outlet to go into. And, you know, quite frankly, I found that where I use the laptop the most is when I'm flying.
Yeah, but, of course, they're being enthused over in some of the trade publications, but you're saying don't be so quick to grab it and embrace it, then.
That's right. Look and see, what are you going to do with it, first of all? Now, I have a laptop. I make extensive use of the laptop because I fly a lot. I get in the airplane, I pull out my laptop, and I start to do some useful work. I've got to have a battery. If you have a battery, you've got to have a flat-screen display. You can't have a cathode ray tube-type display and run it with a battery. It uses too much power.
So essentially what you're saying is that IBM has blown it again.
IBM has not done well in the laptop market. And I think if IBM had really looked at the problem properly, they could do very well. IBM have not done well in that market. They've not done well in the software market. In both cases, it's because people running those two segments of IBM's business don't know their business. It's that simple.
In other words, they're operating without a clue, in your opinion, of what
to
do.
That's right.
Now, if they're not doing it right, who is?
Laptops. Mostly these days, the Japanese laptops are great. Toshiba has a fabulous one. Zenith in America has a fabulous one. There are a number of laptops around. Take your pick, you know, but make sure that it is quite light. Make sure that it has the capabilities you're looking for. There are some brand new laptops that are now coming out, which are what we call notebook computers that are ultralight. And now watch out, because a lot of those ultralights are close to worthless because they don't have any disk storage. You can only keep what you can put into memory.
So it's definitely buyer beware, then.
It's buyer beware. Make sure that you know what you're getting and that you can use it.
And I wish we had more time to speak, but this segment is through, and I have only time to say thank you to Adam Osborne for joining us on Live Line. You're listening to Sound Bites.